Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, July 29th, 2003. Today's session is entitled, Some New Visions for the Global Economy, Session 2 of Proclaiming the Year of the Lord's Favor in Our Global Reality, Some New Visions for the Future of God's Earth and God's People, presented by Jim Bowman, number BOJ2003-02. Let's listen in.
Came yesterday, some of you are new today, and to at least the sessions on globalization. And by way of introduction, for those of you who missed yesterday, just the only thing you missed was the negative. We just talked about the negative things yesterday. So if you didn't, today we're going to talk about the positive things. And yesterday we talked about what was evil and sinful about our current system of economic order, and today we're going to have the opportunity to straighten that out and look at this wonderful theme for the healing of the world. Before we get and you're going to be doing a lot of the work, so just you can't fall asleep in this session. You won't anyway, it's in the morning, and you just take your second cup of coffee. Just some materials for those of you who want to take them. This is I work for Lutheran World Relief as on public policy issues in their Washington office. This is a this is our sort of our brochure for the organization as a whole, and the policy office are these brochures. You're welcome to take them, bring them back to your home church, put them up in your rack at church or whatever it is. This is a copies of a publication from the Center of Concern, a Mary Knoll run organization in Washington that looks at economic justice issues and does quite a good job of laying that out, And then the text of the report from the Lutheran World Federation conference on prophetic diaconia, a call to advocacy. And one copy left of Bread for the World's program to end hunger, which is consistent with what we're trying to do here, because obviously hunger is one of the issues we're trying to deal with when we talk about just global economic systems. So help yourself to any of those things. Oh, forgot the one. Yes, I'm still trying to give away landline posters, if you want to take some posters home on landlines, which are a good way of educating people. You just lay this on the table and tells people to pick it up, and then when they pick it up and turn it over, they get the message. Okay, I guess we can start the recording. Those of you, have any of you not received the instructions about recording? Need to be warned in advance? You all know that. Okay. Just don't say anything in this room that you don't want to be broadcast in the rest of the community here. I guess that's the easiest way of saying that. What I want us to do today is kind of an exercise that we are doing against the background of some of the dysfunctions of the current economic system that we all are a part of in our communities, in this country, and as part of the global community. And as citizens, as Christians, seems to me that we have an opportunity and an obligation to be engaged in that, as difficult as it might be, and do our part. Some of you have been going to I missed the first session of this Bible study, which is about sin, and I went to the second session today, and I think there's so many carryovers from that, I couldn't help sitting there thinking about sin and evil in the context of our economic system and the institutions that we create. Is even though the context of the discussion has been primarily in terms of the individual Christian, There are many ways in which we can talk about the structures that we create and the economic systems that we create that are sinful, at least in their impact on people's lives and what they do to them. If we believe that the purpose, and I guess this is an if, maybe some of us don't agree with that, but I'm making the assumption that most of us maybe do. If we believe that the purpose of our economic life is not maximum growth, which is obviously one of the false gospels that we talked about yesterday, or accumulation of wealth, which is another piece of what I think is sinful about this, but instead the enabling, and I'm choosing these words very carefully and we'll be coming back to them later, but it's instead the enabling of what I call sufficient, sustainable livelihood for everyone, and the nourishing of Earth's regenerative health, another thing we could talk about for a long time, but we're just making that assumption that that's what we are involved with as stewards of creation. Then the question comes, what are the practical implications for our human economic activity? Or, to say it another way, what would have to happen in our daily economic life if freedom to acquire, consume, and promote unqualified economic growth in a global marketplace without counting the costs were challenged by the freedom from that orientation? The answers don't come out of the blue. They require some discipline. They require some very deliberative shaping of structures, the reshaping of structures. They come at many forms and they come at many levels. For those of us who identify ourselves as part of a faith community, some of these answers come as we struggle to understand what it means to be created in the image of a creator, and what it means to be not only individuals in relationship with that creator, but what it means to live out that relationship in families, in neighborhoods, in nations, and ultimately as citizens of the world community. We see some alternatives emerging and existing in some of the guiding principles that are being developed by people in both the global north and the global south, in some of the resistance that is taking place to the current global economic structure. We see some attention also to this in faith communities. The ELCA has I don't know how many of you have seen the statement on economic life. Have any of you studied that in your congregations? Very powerful, very wonderful sort of point of beginning, I think. And we could have benefited probably just by taking that and worked with it. But if you haven't seen that, go back to your congregations, and I would assume that in a drawer someplace in the file, you can dig that out. It's one of the major social statements of the ELCA.
What is the title of that again?
There are less than 10 major economic statements. And the only one that has the word economic, I mean, the state social statements, is the only one that says economic in it. Is it
okay?
Is it in there? In there?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
But it'd be available on the website through the
I would guess it would be in the library here. And it would be, all right, absolutely. All these social statements, thank you, are on the website. Mm-hmm. So you can go to ELCA websites, download the social, just click on social statements. That'll appear someplace and then look at that. That's been done. That's been out now about, I think, at least 5 or 6 years. And it's a very good Very good statement. What I'd like to do this morning is to have us take, and we won't take the time to sort of, I'm gonna cheat by giving you a guiding principle. We could spend a lot of time coming up with a guiding principle, and that's sort of what, if you've ever been on committees to make statements, you find out that it takes forever to do this. So I'm going to just sort of throw in your laps a guiding principle. But then what I want you to do then, and we're going to be working in small groups, and it looks to me, I think groups of four or five would be probably an appropriate size group to spend some time in, and then we'll come back and share what we've done. But what I want you to do, we'll take a guiding principle, and then we're going to make out of that guiding principle, whether you agree, and for those of you, some of you may not even agree with the guiding principle. That's not the point. We don't want to argue the guiding principle. We want to assume that this guiding principle has some accuracy, some validity, or some, at least, even if it doesn't, let's play along with it. And then out of that, list examples of public policies that would be necessary to enact that principle. All right? We're going to do that at several levels. We're going to talk about public policies that would have to be enacted at the local level. By that local level, I mean the neighborhood or community in which you live. What some of those policies would have to be at the national level. Well, you might even do it at the state level. That's sort of maybe you want to do that at the state level, at the national level, and then at the global level. So this is an ambitious project, but it'll be fun. And then once you have done that, then go back to those policies and talk about make a list of 1, 2, 3, how many we have time for, of practices now being different from policies. List practices that consistent with those policy, with the principle and the policies that you've identified, that would be necessary if structural changes were to take place. Because that's what we're talking about, actually changing the structure of things. Right? Don't want you to take a lot of time with this in the sense of debating the policies. It's more important to sort of get them down on paper. You don't all have to agree with them, but just say, I think this is an example of a policy that we'd have to support or enact if we were to achieve, and I'll get to what's on the board here in a minute. So, if we have time, we will, and then of course this is all sort of pie in the sky, dreaming, sort of thinking big. But at the same time that we're thinking big, I think we also want to think realistically. So if your group finishes and everybody else isn't quite done, I would encourage you to go back to some of these policies and talk about what would be some of the difficulties or risks involved if we really adopted those policies. Okay. This is sort of the framework statement principle that we're working with. And all of these words are kind of important. We won't take a lot of time to define them, but you can ask questions about that. Just in terms of just in the sense of the biblical shalom, or just and sustainable, communities and societies will need a system of commerce and production where each and every act is ecologically sustainable and restorative. That's sort of the beginning principle, and a corollary of this part of this principle is ultimately this will require a transition from carbon-based economies to economies based on permanent renewable sources of energy. This is something that I think we can all play around with, and I don't want to minimize the importance of this by using the word play, but I want you to take this with some seriousness, but I want you to have fun with it. And don't be afraid to just use your imagination and sort of break out of the box that we sometimes find ourselves in when we talk about this. So, if you can just arrange your chairs where you don't have to mix this group up. If there's only three in a group, kind of join. Let's not be more than five. And get in a group and start. And one person will be the recorder, because we'd like to come back and just share what some of the things you've come up with. So when you form a group, I'll give you a piece of paper. Somebody has to have a, and just write these things down. And I'll sort of put the framework up here again in case. If you have any questions, raise your hand. I'll come around. I may come around, just listen to the discussion to make sure that it's, yes.
Can I just clarify your second statement there?
Yes.
I mean, that's
sure.
The first statement, that's the basic paradigm.
Yes, right.
The second statement is, now, are you saying that that's sort of a prioritization of what things have to occur, or is that an example of the kind of things we're looking for? I'm just
right.
I'm a little confused about the relationship.
Yes, right. This is a very, very broad kind
right.
of a statement,
right.
and if I sort of let you sort of go with that, we might be just way all over the place.
Yeah, it's not something you can really act on.
Yeah,
say,
yeah, right. It isn't. I wanted to give something that you could really focus on
right.
to talk about, you know, specific policies that would, and we're sort of, and we're making some assumptions here. So it's possible that someone in the group would say, well, I don't believe that we really need to have a transition from carbon-based economies to other kinds. You may disagree with that. But let's assume that that is what we're going to have to do
yeah.
at some point down the road.
Right.
And if we are going to be doing that, what steps
do
we need to be taking now in order to make this transition? And it can be, I mean, it can begin at very mundane levels, but think of it in terms of the policy level. By public policy, we're talking about laws that would have to be enacted even at the local level, taxes maybe to support,
In this case, basically, instead of spreading it out to looking at our relationship to water and a number of other things, we're looking at taking that initial paradigm and look at how that relates specifically to energy.
Right.
Okay.
And the energy that we use
right.
that makes our economy run.
Okay.
And is it only energy, or is it other sectors of the economy?
Well,
I mean, they're all in the economy,
It would be any sector of society that requires some form of energy to be sustainable. So that if you're talking about a factory that is producing copper, you know what would you need to do? So if you've got if someone in your group already has paper and pen, you can use. I'm giving you. As a good steward here, I'm using just recycled one side of paper here, so don't be confused by what's on your
right. I'll have this one. Yes, please join your leader.
And you can stop recording now, Bob, in the room wherever you are, and come back on. This is great. Three groups. That'll give us enough time to report back.
Thank you.
This is good.
This is good.
Yes. When they get a lot of money. Yes. So.
I always try not to get pulled into the discussions here because I'm supposed to be, you know, moving around, but sometimes I can't resist when I hear conversations going on that I'm especially interested in.
You're a weak, sinful being.
Yes. one of the... In the last group, they were talking about, power generations, you know, systems and fairly, you know, large. We won't get into all the aspects of it, but what was interesting about in the mid '70s and early '80s, I was involved with working with alternative energy in the Department of Engineering at the University of Nebraska. And one of the arguments at that time we were making for more decentralized systems of generating power. Just one of the arguments that we were making at that, we said it was less vulnerable to sabotage and terrorism. It's sort of interesting, back that time, terrorism wasn't even on the agenda of anybody. No one was even thinking. It wasn't an argument that carried a lot of weight because nobody was thinking, well, we don't have to worry about that. Now suddenly, things have changed, and there may be more interest and public support, even national support, that would move the economy perhaps in that direction where it wasn't receiving much support for it before. I just sort of wanted to throw that out as part of the last group that we were talking about. Let's share some of the, let's try to do this as in an orderly way if we can. What did most of your, I would guess there would be, I'm looking for some maybe commonalities with groups. Let's just take one topic or one issue in this group and just mention, you don't have to, what is one of the things that you talked about, and we'll see if any of the other groups talked about the same thing. Let's start with this group here.
Transportation,
okay. Did anybody, how many other groups mentioned transportation? Maybe didn't spend a lot of time with it, but almost all of you talked about, I'm supposed to say that they can start recording now, I guess. This is so strange. Start recording. I told them not to do it when we were in small groups.
Let there be recording.
Other areas. We'll come back to transportation, but let's see if there are other sort of common themes that came up. Any other topics in this group besides transportation?
Packaging and recycling.
Recycling, packaging, dealing with as solving waste issues.
Most of the packaging is made from oil.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Plastics.
Anyone else? Any other group talked about those things?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's go to this group and see what any other areas besides these two that you talked about.
Water. Water quality. Water control. Conservancy, and all levels.
Okay, good. And any other, maybe this is the only group that talked about water issues. Yeah, well, you were unique.
Well, thank you.
We would have given us more time. We'd have got to that.
We're really good. And this group over here.
Our focus was pretty much on energy. And primarily on. We talk a lot about electrical energy and the production of electrical energy and the movement away from a carbon base, and how local policies can affect that. Became much more difficult for us as we began to move up the food chain into the national and global level to look at how those policies might get affected, you know, directly.
I'm sure that other, I mean, I would guess that problem, I mean, partly it was the way that I didn't give you enough time to sort of move to the other areas, but I assume that all of you sort of began at the local level, and, or you didn't.
You jumped into the global.
You did with the global. Okay, let's talk about some policies or policy recommendations or suggestions that you may have made relating to these issues. That would have to be in place if we were going to make this transition. How about the transportation end of things? Were there any policy recommendations that came out of this group as far as transportation was concerned?
I'm not sure I understand the difference between policies and practices, but we did say...
They blur, so...
Okay, we decided to be hard on the consumer.
Uh-huh.
And require the consumer to pay the full cost of, what do we call it, the full life cycle cost of transportation.
Transportation. At all levels.
At all
levels. Yeah. Okay. both commercial, private, whatever transportation was involved.
I think so.
Okay. Any other? Did any of you? Did any of the other groups come up with his same sort of policy recommendation or something similar to that in terms of dealing with the true cost or the life cycle cost of what the whatever transportation would be involved?
Well, since a lot of transportation monies come from the state and the federal government, we wanted there to be standards that distribute that money on a fair means.
Distribute it to whom?
Or to the communities who are going to develop these plans.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were concerned with how that would be financed and who would benefit and who would not benefit and who may need the benefits.
And with a plan that looks at the whole, like we're from basically, except from Dean, from the Seattle area, which we're going right through this right now, mm-hmm. and how there's not a plan looking at transportation in the suburbs as well as in the city, and there needs to be an overall plan, whether that comes at the national level, the state level, or whomever.
Okay.
If the hidden subsidies that now subsidize automobile transportation, you know, if that incentive were removed, it would provide huge resources for the development of an efficient system of public transportation.
Mm-hmm. Development of mass transit policies to encourage that. Mm-hmm.
And employment practices we talked about to support it. So that mass transit works.
You know, changes in times, et cetera, so that.
Okay.
This is closely related, but we did talk about reversing policies that provide incentives for companies regarding the extraction of natural non-renewable resources. Mm-hmm. And in effect, we're subsidizing oil companies by, you know, by allowing them a depletion allowance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. From oil that they drill out of the ground, and so we're actually paying companies to, you know, to dig into those resources.
When I was working at the University of Nebraska in the solar office there, one of the things that we tried to raise at that point was the economics that were thrown back at us was the cost of solar energy as compared to nuclear energy or another type of energy. And in all of the economies that were developed at that time, there was nothing that talked about the cost of producing that and the subsidies that were used to generate that kind of thing. And solar had really there were a few tax credits for homeowners to put up, if you put in a solar system, mm-hmm. you could get a few dollars tax credit. But it really wasn't enough to sustain an industry, because as soon as those tax credits disappeared, and then there were no dealers around to service those systems that went in place. Mm-hmm. So then they said, "Well, see, solar doesn't work. We don't have a system."
Well, and also nobody was considering the cost of disposing of the nuclear.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
The cost of producing nuclear energy.
Yeah.
And how it affects the environment.
Yeah. And I was in Nebraska at the time, and they wanted to put one of those nuclear sites in Nebraska, and my goodness, I tell you, it caused incredible controversy in the state, and everybody got in trouble. Yes.
I think I like to bring up something that I think is really, really important, mm-hmm. and that because of the way that we have structured our economy now, we structured our economy on we're living extremely well in the present, on the backs of our children in the future, and on the backs of other people not in this country, not in North America, who are providing that to us. So if we're going to change, no matter what we do, it's going to cost us money. And I think nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to really get out. This, you're not going to get as much for what you pay if we change the way we're doing things. Because right now, the way we're doing things, somebody else is giving all of us a subsidy
so that we get the good life, whether it's our children or our grandchildren or somebody in Guatemala or Bahrain or Iraq or somewhere else, because we're basically taking something away from them in order to live the life that we're living. And that's the big sticker, I think, is nobody wants to realize, oh my God, I'm going to have to pay $3 for a gallon of gas, and people are going, oh my God, gas is almost $2 a gallon. It's still subsidized like crazy at $2 a gallon. So one of the things I think that it's almost, and I don't know how you put that into policy, but that's just, you know, somehow people have got to realize if we in fact want a just economy, it's not going to come free. It's not going
to,
you know.
We just have to know the real cost.
Pay the real cost. Yeah.
It seems to me that and this is where, you know, I'm not sure where we take this, but I agree with you. This is a justice issue. We are spending our children's inheritance and spending, you know, the rest of the world's livelihoods, even as we speak. But to what extent is the community of faith teaching, passing on the faith to its children that will allow them to make the kind of decisions that will need to be? I mean, we aren't even making it ourselves. To what extent are we, if we were serious about this, I think, the church would really be countercultural in this culture, because this culture is highly consuming, and it's
we're parasitic,
and we don't see that. We don't see that.
We're parasitic. It's just that's what it is.
Yeah, one of the sins that was talked about earlier this morning, and so I think, I mean, the challenges are big, and I think that. We're past the hour. We have to stick to this time. So. We're just getting started. I, in some ways, I sort of apologize for sort of opening up such a big world for us to deal with. But I think it's exciting for us. I mean, this is what it's going to take. It's going to take voices of people like yourself in the communities that you are living to raise those alternative visions. It isn't. People in Washington aren't seeing it. No. I mean, I'm sorry, folks.
Well,
there's a few there.
That raises another issue, is that none of these policies make any difference. We're not going to change anything unless we stop our political leaders from buying governments like our own. And because the people that are in power are not going to make these changes until we eliminate the ability of multinational corporations to buy our governments. And because we need to put people in power, they're going to make these changes. And they're not going to make these changes if they're beholden to those people that put them there, and it wasn't us.
Yeah.
But we can make some changes on levels that we have more control.
Yeah. Yes, we can.
Well, we're just getting into the good stuff now. We have to quit. In some ways, it'd be nice to continue this another day, but we really are locked
in.
We're finished now, huh? Yeah, we're finished now. Go back, talk about it at lunch. Thank you for coming. Thank you.